Kia ora, kia ora te whānau. Hope you are all doing really well. I was like, should I say this or shouldn't I say this? Nah. So I'm day two of my bleed. And the reason why I share this is so that you know or understand the energy in which I am speaking from. And that is a bit more inward. It's a little bit slower. A little bit more stuttering, eh? Because straight up, day two of my bleed, I'm like, come on, Vanessa, find your words. If this is your first time here, kia ora, I highly recommend, also do whatever you want, but highly recommend that you start at the first episode. I kind of go over my intention, why I created this, and just little ways that you can take care of yourself as we go on this journey together. Before I, you know, jump into this episode called Becoming a Youth Worker, I just wanted to say a massive, like giant, massive thank you to Wahine who have reached out, you know, through DMs and conversations in real life, through emails, just sharing their story and what they have learned, because it's not about me, even though it used to be about me, because hello, center of attention, enjoyed it. But this series has nothing to do with me. I feel like sharing my story is being of service to whoever is open to receiving it. And so, yeah, it's always humbling to receive somebody's story or their insight. And it doesn't get old, eh? Like, I've been receiving these messages for a couple of years. And I'm still emotional about it. I'm like, fuck. Thank you, you know, thank you for allowing me to see you, to hear you, to feel you. And I always learn something new, about myself, because I find the more I learn about other people, I then learn more about myself. All right, big breath. That was for me, Fano, not for you. So this episode is called Becoming a Youth Worker. And I was dropping my son off to school this morning. It is the 14th of February. And a little, you know, you have those little insights or the little pops that come through. And I mentioned in the last episode, the moment that I planted the seed to talk about this, my mind, my body has really opened up to receiving little bits and pieces of my whole journey. And as I was driving, the little happened. And I was like, remember youth work? Remember when you were studying to become a youth worker and your whole life fell apart? I was like, that's right. So I just wanted to touch on the last episode, like take you on just a little bit when I'd moved to Australia and the reason why I wanted to talk about youth work. So we moved to Australia, went to school, found myself a job at the bakery, which was probably my first not enjoyable job. Like, my first ever job was doing data entry for Dyson, so I'll always forever be a fan of Dyson vacuum cleaners. But mum was like the finance admin-y person, and I was like 10 or 11. This story has nothing to do with anything, but just wanted to tell it anyway. And my role was to, so before you do surveys online, back then you had to fill out a form and send it in. And so it was my job to go into the system and put everything in, and I was getting paid $10 an hour. But because I was so fucking hopeless, I never did them, and mum ended up doing it for me. Shut mum. And I still got paid. But anyway. And so I started working at a bakery and they were all Māori, which was really cool. Like, imagine landing in Sydney, you're still trying to find your feet, you're in a whole new community, whole new environment. And I found a job working with Māori. And that was, I guess, I've always longed for independence. You know, I don't know if it's an Aquarius thing, but I'm like, let me be free. Like, fuck the rules. That I found a place for me to land, or that part of me that wanted to be free and find this independence, that part of me landed in this job, which gave me a sense of belonging. And so I was traveling back and forth from Sydney back to Auckland quite a bit for a couple of years because I was with someone at the time. And I'm going to be very intentional in the way that I share this part because, yeah, it's this story also belongs to this person, and it's not for me to tell, you know, like give all their details. just privacy, you know. And so I traveled back to New Zealand and I was 15. I think I was 15 and I was pregnant. So I was pregnant. Nobody knew. I remember taking the pregnancy test back in Auckland and da-da, positive. And so I'd flown back to Sydney and my mom didn't know. I didn't tell my mom. It was only my mom and I living together at the time, single mama. And I don't know why I did this. Maybe I did, or I don't know. I had this little yellow and gray Nike bag. Remember how, like, back in the day you had the tiny, tiny, tiny backpack that held fucking nothing, but you thought it was cool? So this bag had all of my letters. Me and my best mate used to write to each other in class because you couldn't send text messages back then. And we would write to each other. So all these, like, little love notes between me and my mate were in there, and the pregnancy test was in there. And my mom, it was in the evening, and where we lived was in a studio, like a studio apartment. So there was one room that had bunk beds. We had a box. And this is not to say we're poor, bro. This is, like, resourceful. We had a box that would hold our TV, and there was a kitchen and a bathroom, and that was it. But it was a set of, like, apartments in a whole building, so we shared the laundry, all that sort of jam. And so I was on my bed, so not far away. Like, if I farted, you can hear it. And mum, for some reason, reached up and it fell out of the bag. You know, the pregnancy test fell out of the bag. And that's how mum had found out that I was pregnant. And so my mum's first reaction was, you know, you can't have this baby. Like, I was a child. I was a fucking child. Yeah, and so we looked into abortion. And so it wasn't too long after, to be honest. I think it was about a week or so later. I don't think I was in school. I think I just left high school, didn't want to go to school anymore and was just working full time. But again, nobody knew. This was something that was between me and my mum and the person who I'd, you know, I was going to say fall pregnant with or become pregnant with, whatever the word is. And I went through this process of abortion. And I bring this up, and I will actually have a whole nother episode for this because I really want to talk about birth in itself and how that can trigger or what that did for me. But to lay on a bed, with all these random people around me, and this is nobody's fault. This is not coming from a place of fault, but rather a place of experience. To lay on a bed, to be put to sleep, and knowing, because they go through the whole process of what is going to happen. Like, we're going to insert this in here, and there's a little hook that comes in, and then we're going to hook the baby out, and they give you some type of, like, a chat before. Is this what you want to do? Part of me didn't. You know, I was like, well, I don't really want to do this. This is what my mum wants. But deep down, fuck, best thing. Honestly, the best thing I could have ever done. And, yeah, I just remember waking up and they put you in these, like, little bays with a recliner seat in them. And they come out with some food and something to drink. And, yeah, off you go. Like, you just go back to your life. And we didn't have a car then, so we caught a bus, got a feed at Hungry Jack's, and then went home. But I remember sitting on the seat, and just a feeling of loss or what happened, because I had gone to sleep, you know, so I don't actually know what had happened, but because there was so much sensation down there, not only in my womb, but yeah, around my vagina, in my legs, that it triggered the sexual trauma. At the time, I didn't know that. At the time, I didn't know it had triggered that or it started triggering memories. And, you know, the whole process of abortion is traumatic in itself. But like I mentioned in the last episode, like, I'm holding these secrets. I'm holding this experience without anyone knowing, and then I'm continuing on with life. And as life is happening, it's kind of piling up, eh? It's piling, it's triggering, but I don't know where it's coming from. And then life continues to happen. And mum had gone out that night, and I just remember sobbing. Just a feeling of loneliness and isolation and guilt and what have I done. But something else is stirring inside me, but I don't know what it is. And then, you know, as time passes, you just get on with life. It's not something you sit and deeply speak about. And maybe I've just forgotten, but I'm sure mum and I would have had like conversations, and me being me, yeah, I'm all good. Sweet as, you know, let's just get on with it, because talking about shit, that was fucking uncomfortable. Like, they made me talk about my feelings. Do not make me talk. I fucking hate it, because anytime I would speak, it would start to stir emotions. I didn't want anyone to know that I was weak. I didn't want anyone to know what I was feeling, because then I would be a target. That was my belief at the time, you know, not trusting myself, not trusting other people. So the best thing for me to do was to keep guarded. And at some point, 16-ish, I decided to move home. So said goodbye to my mum, moved back to New Zealand, moved back to Auckland, and moved into a hostel in, not Newmarket, Green, not Green Lane, somewhere near Newmarket. And it was just a little room and shared bathroom and heaps of people living in there. And yeah, stayed there for a little bit, got myself a job up the road, just working in a cafe. And that was my life for a little bit. You know, get my paycheck, drink it, smoke it. Do I choose a packet of smokes or do I choose food? Of course I'm going to choose smokes. I was a heavy smoker. I wasn't like a heavy drinker or anything. I started smoking when I was fucking 10. Me and my cousin Lewis, we would... So remember the garage that I was talking about that everyone would live in? So my cousin lived in there, and sometimes she would have a ciggy in the room. And she would flick her butts out the window. And yeah, me and Lewis would sit underneath the windowsill and wait for them and then catch them, smoke the rest. Or we would go around collecting butts. This is how resourceful we were as young people. We would go around collecting butts, make sure we get some papers, because some people would in our family would smoke rollies, and some of them would just smoke normal, like tailor-made ciggies. And we'd take out all the tobacco and then make one whole cigarette. Like, what the fuck? That's so cool. So rather than having a couple of puffs, you know, over time we'd get a whole ciggy. Anyway, so I'd found out about a course, a youth worker course that was run by an organization called Praxis. Now Praxis is based in, I think their hub is in Wellington, but they had like franchises all around New Zealand. They're now in Melbourne as well. And they were a Christian-based youth worker. And if you know me, like I don't go to church, that's not my jam. But back then I grew up Catholic and I was deep in the church. And so it just felt like a natural progression to move into a Christian-based youth work course. And what I didn't realize at the time was like, this is cool. I get to help people. I get to hang out with young people. If you've ever done youth work, not in resi care, but if you've done youth work, it's a fucking fun job. For me, it was fun. You know, a part of you gets to play all the time. Like, really? I'm going to get paid to play basketball and hang out with some young people, have some cool chats. You know, some of it's pretty raw and real, and yeah, there's some pretty fucked up shit that happens. But it was about halfway through the year that I started to see myself in these young people. So in the beginning, cool, I'm here to help. This is fun. I love to learn. We're going to cool places. We're getting to go and hang out in schools and after school, hang out with at-risk young people. And so there was a workshop that was being run or put on called the Circle of Courage. And the Circle of Courage is like an Indigenous framework to support young people at risk. And so there's four, it's a circle divided up into four, and it talks about the spirit of generosity, the spirit of belonging, the spirit of mastery, and the spirit of independence. And the guy that ran this or came up with the framework, Larry Brentro, he'd had this whole, like, he had slides and he had young people's stories, and then he was talking about trauma and why generosity is important, or why mastery is important, independence, belonging. And I walked away feeling so, not triggered, but emotional, because every video that was put up of these young people and sharing their stories, I was like, but that's me. That's me. But I feel that. Oh, I went through that. And even though I was there to learn to support other young people, I walked away learning about myself. And I didn't like that. That sensation, that feeling of, but that's me, but I'm also here to help people. How am I supposed to help people if that's me? Does that mean I need help? But how am I supposed to be helped if I don't trust people? And it's not to say that that's what I was saying at the time, because fuck knows what I was going through my head at the time. But if I was to go back and reflect and look back in the ways that I was acting and behaving, the ways that I internalize a lot of the information, that's what I would say. And Māori have something, I'd say Māori have something similar. It's something called Te Whare Tapa Whā. So if you imagine a marae or a meeting house, this is more to do with like health and mental health. For everybody, the circle of courage was specifically for young people at risk. But I know a lot of Māori use this framework. So taha wairua, spiritual, taha hinengaro, mental and emotional, taha whānau, family and social, taha tinana, physical, and then whenua, so your land and your roots. And so I had no understanding of whare tapa whā, but to walk away with this piece of knowledge around the circle of courage stuck with me, even if it was just a quiet hum in the back of my mind, continuing to pop up, whether I was working with young people or, dealing with my own trauma. Even now, like it came up last year, I still have the book. I'm like, oh, there you are. There you are, reminding me of your potency, you know, at the time not really understanding it. But I'm knocking on my, like a, you know, sometimes we get these little knocks on the door or the window or the head or up the ass, and we might not fully understand it, but it weaves in for whatever reason. And sometimes it takes a few years, sometimes 20 years. for that weaving to land. And yeah, because that stirred something up inside me, when I was studying youth work, they also talked about, well, you can't help other people unless you help yourself. You know, you can't help traumatized people if you're traumatized as well. And so they took us through this whole, I would say it was a 12-step program, eh? And I think it went for a couple of days. And at one point we were given the opportunity to give our testimonial or to get up and speak and to share. And it was on the last day, and I tend to be that kind of a person, like I want to share, but I just wait, and then I wait, and then I wait. And then the moment that it's like, is anyone else, because we're going to finish soon, I'm like, me. This has taken me so long to say me, but here I am. And I sat on the chair, and it was like a semicircle, and they were all our classmates, bro, like built massive rapport with them. We would meet so many times a week and have all these team buildings and go away on these wānanga. So they felt like family. They really did feel like family. And I didn't talk about sexual trauma, but I spoke about the abortion, like to let that secret out, to be witnessed, to be heard, to feel the discomfort. Like I almost felt like a little child, not being judged, but you're constantly in your head like, are they going to think something else of me? Especially being in like a Christian-based course. Like, bro, that's not fucking something that you do. And here I am, like, I had an abortion at 15. And it was, I felt the awkwardness inside of me because it was silence. And I won't say his name, but one of my friends, the look on his face, there was just like shock or like confusion or anguish. Like there was something really uncomfortable stirring inside of him. And that made me uncomfortable, you know, because for some of us, we can feel their emotions and then we make it about ourselves and then we create a story and then it turns into something just like a big fuckery of a noise inside. And once I had finished, this was a very healing moment for me. Once I had finished speaking, the whole classroom had stood up and made like a circle around me. And the wahine who was taking it, You know, at the time I was like deeply into prayer, or that version of prayer. And it's not like she was praying away my sins. That wasn't it. It was that she was speaking words of love into me, and that it's okay. And yeah, just to have everybody around me in that circle holding me while I was sobbing. And I don't think I've ever allowed myself to be seen in that way, like so vulnerable. And the after effect of that, there were two things that had happened. Is I felt incredibly free, because it was something that I'd held for so fucking long, and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know what to do with the guilt and the shame, and just to allow it to come out and nobody needing to fix it was a beautiful step to take. And at the same time, it opened up so many doors that I did not see coming. And I feel like from that little 12, I don't know if it was a 12-step program, but that's what I'm going to call it. From that 12-step program, it opened up everything. My anger, my frustration. I wrote down here, it's like all the masks that I was wearing had melted, and I was like, I'd been caught out in this lie. You know, like, fuck, I'm actually not okay. I'm not okay. I'm not comfortable with myself. I'm not happy. I am depressed. I do think about harming myself. I don't want to live some days. I don't know how to get on with my life. And just the discomfort. So yeah, there was freedom in sharing, like this weight had been lifted, but also like I'd been caught out. You know, when you're camping at night and you get a torch and then you catch a possum and then just like stand still with their eyes fucking wide open. That's what it felt like. And I didn't know how to move through the state of vulnerability. So it got really messy. It got really messy for myself and the people around me. I started self-harming. I won't go into details of what the self-harming was. But what I will speak to is it gave me, and this might, yeah, this is not to say do this, but I have to be honest about it. It gave me a sense of relief. This pressure that I was feeling inside, this inability to express or to be fully seen and continue on this journey, just the act of self-harming released the pressure, and it was another way for me to focus on a physical pain rather than this internal pain that was happening inside. Now, here is where I feel I am privileged. Not privileged. Yeah, I've just always been supported my whole life. I don't know if this is a luck thing, but I don't feel like everyone has this. I've always been supported my whole life. There's always been people around me to catch me, to hold me, to hear me, to help me, to support me, to guide me. But just at times I was blinded by it. You know, I don't need your help, bro. I'm all good. And once this unraveling started to happen, that's where like the senior youth workers Mark Barnard and Greg Morris, I love yous. They really stepped in and supported me. And so I did one counseling therapy sort of session with Greg. And what that helped me to unpack is because we did a little bit of art therapy, and it was similar to the Circle of Courage, where I had to split this piece of paper into four, which is like a practice or an activity that we would do with our young people. And just using different colors of like, well, how do I feel about this? And how do I feel about this? And whatever would come up, whether it was an image, a word, just using art as a way to express myself. And even though it was one session, still to this day, it is something that I practice. And it's not something that I learned anywhere else. But just the idea that emotion can have a color, emotion can have a sound, emotion can have an image was another way to almost take it away from me. Like it was something that I could express on paper and see it for what it is. And then I ended up moving into, they were like a residential house. And it was like a closed community that young people at risk would come and stay with them. until they could find their feet, and then they would move out. And so I moved into this community for not long. I don't know. It was less than a month. It wasn't very long because, bitch, I did not survive. I was like, I cannot do the things that I would normally do out in the world. We have to be good people in here. Fuck, that's hard. And in that time that I was there, I learned a beautiful lesson on structure and discipline. And because every morning you had to get up and you had to shower and you had to feed yourself and then you had your chores and then you would go about your day, whether that was mahi, work, or whether that was your study, and then you would come home, you do your chores, there would be food prepared, you would eat together, and then there would be a night time, whether it was like prayer or reflection or some type of focus group. I felt supported, I felt grounded and calm, but also really scared at the same time. I think we think that we can only be one thing. One of the cards in the Mana Wahine affirmation deck is I can experience trauma and pleasure. So here I was experiencing love, I was experiencing support from every single angle, like nourishing my body, to someone to talk to, a safe place to sleep, connection, all these things. But whether you can call it a nervous system or fear or the mind or ego was like, nah, I don't know. Like this feels like too much of a change. I can't trust this, because if I go down this road, what does that mean for me? And I want to just go back to familiarity, which means isolating myself, hiding all my feelings, self-harm. And by self-harm, not only, physical harm, but not taking care of myself and smoking fucking 100 dhuris a day. There was just like a constant conflict of trusting, leaning into support and then moving back into isolation. Leaning into support, moving back into isolation. I think I'll leave the story here. And as I've shared that whole story, the reason why I share becoming a youth worker is my intention was not to heal. That was the last thing I wanted to do or even understood. The last thing I wanted to do was to help myself. But the idea of helping other people, and in that process, learning about trauma, learning to support other people, what does that look like? I then learned about myself, and then that opened so many doorways for me, or avenues, or ideas, or people. And which is why I'm an advocate for healing will happen moment by moment. And sometimes we have no idea. As much as we like to think that we know or we feel like we're in control and intention is incredibly important, sometimes we have no idea what is going to come our way and what it's going to open up and where it's going to lead. And I feel like, and I trust, I feel like that becoming a youth worker was the word catapult that fucking flung me in up in the air, landed on my ass, with so much beauty, not so much grace, and really took me, I could call it the dark, or some people like to call it shadow work, but it wasn't a beautiful place, but it was necessary, because I thought, if I just keep bypassing it, then everything's going to be fine. My life's going to be fine. Everything's going to be great. And it wasn't fucking great, which was dying inside. So I'm grateful. I'm really grateful for that lesson that I did not expect coming. Because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have learned the things that I had learned. So at the end of every podcast, I just ask you, and I'm going to ask you every single time, because sometimes we forget to ask ourselves and we need a little reminder. How are you? How are you? How are you feeling? How's the body? How's your breathing? How's your heart rate? Just take a moment just to check in. And it doesn't have to mean anything giant. There doesn't have to be a story attached. Just check in with yourself. If your heart's beating a little bit fast, if you notice you're breathing more into your chest, if you're feeling heat through the body, just take note. Just take note of that. And before you end this podcast and go about your mahi, go about your day, whatever you do in your life, shake this off. Shake my story, my experience. The last thing I want you to do is to keep thinking about my experience and what that must have been like for me. You know, like, don't carry that. That's for me. Give it back. Give it back to me. And that's something that I take care of. One thing I wanted to touch on before you go is when I speak over the Stillness Speak series, it is going to be non-linear. So even though I'm taking you from as a child and then I've moved to Australia and then had these experiences and then gone into youth work, and then the next thing I'll be talking about is birth and meeting my husband, I will still be moving back and forth because there's pieces that I feel flow better once I reach that topic of that podcast. Rather than trying to spill out everything, I'm just pulling nuggets and pulling pieces that I feel are valuable. Taking a breath. Last thing is, if something has come up for you, continue the conversation. And that might be on paper, that might be with a friend, that might be through a voice message to yourself, that might be recording a video to see yourself while you speak, that might be in the way that you move your body and you listen to music, because that's a conversation. It could be the way that you express yourself through art, paper, pens, flax, harakeke, whatever you have available to you to keep moving so that nothing gets stuck. Please utilize that. Yeah. Take care of yourself. Thank you. I appreciate your time, your energy, your ears, and we'll catch you on the next one.